because we are to apologize is just to like lowering your pride, you know. There's some people think that
I'm sorry, I can't hear
lowering
you.
Lowering the pride to apologize. Pride.
B-R-I. Oh, pride, yes. Mm-hmm. Pride is a big one that keeps us from apologizing, isn't it?
And then sometimes either party also think that they are in the right, see? So it's very difficult to apologize.
Mm. Okay. Verbal, our group's discussions are that by apologizing, we meant to actually seek for forgiveness and also to remind ourselves not to commit so-called the same mistakes again, and to sincerely repent. And we also discovered that usually the person whom we want to apologize to are usually people who are very close to us. Some of us are our spouse, some are our superior or even co-colleagues, and also our parents. And what actually hinder our apologizing is actually our ego, self-centeredness, and some even mention is because of because of their egos, yeah. And then lastly is to forgive others is actually also to forgive ourselves, so that we are able to release the mental burden and to carry on. Yeah.
Mm, good. Very good. What about other groups?
Hi, Venerable.
Where are you? Oh, yes.
Hi, our group got a little technical about apologies. We said there were two kinds of apologies. The first one is when we search ourselves and we can't really see what we did wrong, and we just apologize to smooth things over and create harmony. Mm-hmm. And the other one, of course, is recognizing that we did do something wrong and sincerely regretting it and resolving not to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
And making that admission to the other person.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. So one level of apology, just you know there's friction in the air and you don't want there to be friction anymore. So you apologize, but you're not quite sure if you did anything wrong or if the other person did something wrong. Maybe what you're saying is you're sorry that there's friction and you're expressing your wish for harmony again. Yeah. And sometimes when there's been conflict, just, I think, expressing our wish for harmony is, you know, often quite important. Because sometimes we're, you know, it's not even an issue of somebody having done something wrong. Sometimes, you know, things just for whatever reason, there's misunderstandings. There's also a fake apology. Yeah? Isn't there? When we say we're sorry, but we aren't really, and we're just doing it because we feel obliged to, or because we want something from somebody. But maybe you didn't include that in apologies, because it's not really an apology, is it? It's not one. Yeah.
Excuse me. Yeah, I notice sometimes there's a problem, as in when you forgive someone, it's not because you really forgive them, but you think that you're more superior than them, so you forgive them.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you very well. Could somebody...
Because of your ego, you forgive the person.
Okay, because of your ego, you do forgive.
Yes, because you feel that you're more superior than the other guy.
That belongs in the category with the false apology. That's false forgiveness, isn't it? Yeah, that's not real forgiveness. But it's true. We're very good at manipulating, aren't we? Hmm? Yeah. What happens if you apologize and the other person doesn't forgive you? Is that important? Who says it's important? Who says it's not important? Why isn't it important?
Because you can't change what the other person thinks.
Mm-hmm.
If you have apologized, it means you have admit to yourself they have done something wrong. And so when you apologize, it's up to the other person to actually decide whether they want to accept the apology or refuse the apology.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, accepting and refusing apologies, it's not, it's funny because I think if I apologize, somebody can't give me back my apology. They can't refuse it. Yeah, because my apology just is. Yeah. The other person can let go of their own anger. I think that's what forgive means. Or they can hold on to their own anger. But that's their decision about what they're going to do with their own mind. Yeah? My apology is a sincere expression of what I'm feeling. And if somebody else isn't ready to accept it, that is their business. Isn't that? Like you said, it's not important. If they don't accept it, it's not important because that's their thing. What's important is when other people apologize to us, that we are harmonious in return to them, that we let go of our anger. You know, because even if somebody apologizes to us, if we hold on to our anger, still, we're the ones who are hurting, aren't we? And in the Tibetan version of the Bodhisattva vows, if we don't accept an apology, it is, and instead we retaliate with anger, it's a root transgression of the Bodhisattva vows. So it's incredibly important from our side when somebody apologizes to make sure that we let go of our anger and don't rub it in for the other person. But if we apologize and somebody else, you know, can't let go of their anger, that's up to them. Yeah, the important thing is that from our side we apologized.
And my question is, if it's a fake apology, do you still...
Yeah, so you have a question about fake apologies.
So
what about when we give them or when we receive them?
When we receive a fake apology, do you forgive them? Or?
You know, forgiving them, we don't have to wait for somebody to apologize for us to forgive them. So it isn't that somebody gives us an apology and now we forgive them, and if they give us a fake apology, then we have to figure out whether to forgive them. You know, because forgiving isn't something we do in response to an apology. Forgiving is something we do because we're tired of hurting. Okay?
So is there a difference between forgiving and reconciliation?
Right. Okay, a difference between forgiving and reconciliation. I think forgiving comes first, okay, before reconciliation, because forgiving, I think, is basically letting go of anger. And we can let go of our anger whether or not somebody apologizes to us. If we say, I'm not going to let go of my anger until they apologize to me, then we are causing ourselves unnecessary suffering because we're giving away our power, saying, I can't let go of my hurt and my anger until they apologize. But we can't control them. Okay. So we can forgive whether they apologize or not. And I think since forgiving is letting go of anger, we have to do that before we can reconcile. Because if we're still holding on to some anger, then that's going to really taint everything that happens after that. And sometimes it takes us a while to let go of our anger. Sometimes we can't let it go all at once. We let it go in little chunks. Yeah. But it's something that is really important. And to the extent that we can let go of our anger, that much more we can reconcile. But as long as we're holding our anger and holding on to a grudge, yeah, we're never going to be able to really get along with somebody, because all the time in the back of our mind is the thought, they harm me, I don't like them, I want revenge, they harm me, how can they do that? When we're always holding on to that thought, how are we going to get along with somebody? Okay. So we have to let go of our anger. We also have to let go of our hurt. Now, I think sometimes sometimes the anger comes because of the hurt. Yeah, we're quite attached to somebody. They did something that, you know, interfered with our happiness. We feel hurt. Then we get angry. Then we hold on to a grudge. Then we retaliate. Yeah. I think if we can acknowledge that, to stop it at the level of hurt and recognize, oh, I feel hurt. And then instead of going on to anger, to go back and say, oh, you know, I feel hurt. Why? Because I'm attached to something. What is it I'm attached to? Because if we can let go of whatever it is that we're attached to, we'll let go of the hurt. Okay? So, for example, in very close relationships, when we're very attached to the other person, or we're attached to them saying very sweet, wonderful, encouraging words, because we like to be praised, so we're attached to receiving praise, and instead the person scolds us, or they say hurtful things, or they don't do what we want, okay, then we feel hurt because we're attached to hearing words like, I love you, you're so wonderful, and we're not getting what we want. We're getting the opposite, like, you made a mistake. Yeah. If we can let go of our attachment to hearing the nice words, then we won't get so upset with the other person when they say whatever they say, because we'll recognize that it's coming from them, from their own suffering. Okay? Or when we're attached to a certain outcome and the other person doesn't do what we want them to do, so we have a certain outcome, then we get upset with them. But if we let go of our attachment to that outcome, then, you know, we don't need to bother feeling hurt because of what that person did or didn't do. Okay, you seeing what I mean? Sometimes here there's some very, very deep attachments. You know? And sometimes we don't even recognize them as attachments, because they're very, very deep. Okay. So, for example, from your parents, you know, because since the time we were very little, we looked to our parents to encourage us and to be kind to us. So then when our parents, something happens in their life and they criticize us or they point out our faults, or maybe they're in their own state of confusion and pain, so they say things that aren't true, then we feel so hurt. Yeah, and then we get angry because we feel hurt. Whereas if we realized, wow, I'm just attached to hearing nice, sweet words from my parents. Yeah, that's just my attachment. Why do I need to hear nice, sweet words from somebody? What do nice, sweet words actually do for me? Do they get me out of samsara any quicker? No. Do they purify my negative karma? No. Do they make me a good person? No. Just because somebody says nice things about me doesn't make me a good person. Okay? So if we look, you know, other people's praise and sweet words really don't do much for us. So what's there to be attached to? In the same way, other people's criticism, you know, it doesn't really have to hurt us. We don't have to react with hurt when somebody criticizes. If somebody criticizes us, does it mean we're a failure? Does it? No. Just because somebody doesn't like what we do, it doesn't mean that we're a failure. Okay? It doesn't necessarily mean we did anything wrong. Sometimes we may have made a mistake. You know, we need to listen to us when they criticize. We need to listen to them when they criticize, because maybe they're pointing out a mistake we did make. But lots of times people criticize and it's just coming from their own internal confusion. Yeah. For example, I give a Dharma talk. Some people get so mad when they listen to a Dharma talk. How can you say something like that? That's totally ridiculous. They get so mad. Does that mean that what I'm doing is wrong? Does it? If I give a Dharma talk and somebody gets angry, am I doing something wrong? No. It's coming from them. If I give a Dharma talk and somebody says, "You're so wonderful," does that mean that I'm a good person? No. Okay. We have to learn to evaluate ourselves. Okay? When somebody criticizes, it may mean I made a mistake. I have to listen. But lots of times people say all sorts of stuff. Yeah? And where are you ever going to go in this universe where nobody's ever going to criticize you? Yeah? Where can you go where you're never going to get criticized? You're going to say, Amitabha's Pure Land. Well, let me tell you, if we don't get rid of our ignorance, anger, and attachment, even we go to Amitabha's Pure Land, we're going to think somebody's criticizing us. You know? Because we'll just misinterpret what somebody says. Yeah? If we have ignorance, anger, and attachment in our mind, we go to Sukhavati and Amitabha says, sit down and, you know, meditate on compassion. And we're going to go, why are you bossing me around? Yeah? Is Amitabha doing anything wrong? No, it's totally coming from us. Yeah?
Yeah. Hello, Venerable. I worked in a private practice that provides emotional healing therapies for clients who have emotional problems, all sorts of emotional problems like depression, inconfidence, low self-esteem, all the negativities. Mm-hmm. And the method of the therapies is simply to get in touch with the emotions mm-hmm. without any rationalization, or any logic, I mean any trying to make up something why. It's just in touch with the emotions. What do you think of such a therapy versus the Dharma practice?
You know, it's really hard to say because you just told me the therapy in like 1 minute. How can I evaluate the efficacy of a whole, you know, treatment process having only 1 minute of information about it? Okay. So I can't really say. Yeah. What I can say in general, yeah, is that I think it's important for us all to get in touch with our emotions, because we can't heal from an emotion if we can't acknowledge having it. Okay, because we have to acknowledge having it. It's like when we're sitting there and we're raging and somebody says, boy, you seem angry. And we go, I'm not angry. Yeah, have you seen people do that? I'm not angry, you're just an idiot. You know, they can't even recognize what they're feeling, okay? So if people can't recognize what they feel, there's very little opportunity to actually do something about it, okay? Now the question comes, does just recognizing what we feel necessarily heal us from the feeling? My personal feeling is that, you know, we have to learn to discriminate what are helpful feelings on the path and what are destructive feelings. What are feelings that are in accord with reality and what are feelings that are counterproductive? And I think that's a very important step in healing too. Okay, why do I say that? Because some people think that anger is good. And they think that getting in touch with your anger is really important so that you feel powerful. Okay? From a Buddhist perspective, anger is not beneficial. Okay? You want to get in touch with your anger, not so that you can feel powerful and heal. Okay, because we don't really think you're going to heal because you're angry. Okay, we get in touch with our anger so that we can see what we're holding on to that we need to let go of so that we can stop being angry. Okay.
Ask another question.
Uh-huh.
Especially in Asia, because of the strong cultural values, a lot of people, when they study any religious text, be it Christianity or Buddhism, they tend to hold on to the words and teachings and they try to be good. But in trying to practice to be good, sometimes you can see that a lot of people suppress their feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And how to balance that? Because it seems like it's important not to hold on to feelings. But at the same time, you still have to be good, you know. So that's the tricky part, yeah. Because there's so many people, I mean, myself included, I noticed myself doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So I can empathize. Yeah.
Okay. So when we join a religion and then we feel, oh, I've got to be good. But inside we have all the 84,000 mental afflictions. And we say, oh, but now I've got to be a good Buddhist. I've got to be a good Christian. Stuff it all down. And smile, you know? No. You know, I think, you know, at the beginning, there is a tendency to feel I have to be a good Buddhist. Okay? Now, what is a good Buddhist? Okay? We think, oh, I have to be a Buddha. You know, but we're not Buddhas, are we? We're sentient beings that are confused. So I have to be a good Buddhist. So does that mean I just put on a face and I act nice? You know, we're not going to get very far in our spiritual practice if we do that. Yeah? If we're just always pretending, we're not going to get very far. Because you know what will happen? When we're in front of people, we're so sweet. And then as soon as they walk away, we say nasty things about them. We plot our revenge. We manipulate. You know, nothing changes. And then they come again and write. People are like this sometimes with their spiritual teachers. So nice in front of their spiritual teachers. Then as soon as their spiritual teacher isn't there, they're criticizing other disciples. They're talking behind people's back. They're creating disharmony, you know. Then the teacher comes, oh, thank you, Master. You know. That's not real practice. Yeah? Because remember, real practice is transforming our minds. Yeah? It's not pushing something down. It's what I call putting chocolate frosting on garbage. Okay? When we act fake, we're putting chocolate frosting on garbage. Because real spiritual practice involves having the courage to be able to look at what it is we're feeling and then to really change that. Okay? It's not just about acting fake. Now, it is true, okay, that our verbal and physical actions are easier to control than our mental actions. So we start at the level of at least stopping our harmful physical behavior and trying to keep our mouth closed when it needs to be closed. Okay? So we do start at that level, and that's good. And, you know, we might be angry inside, but at least this time we keep our mouth closed instead of dumping all of our negativity out on the people around us. So that's progress for us. We need to pat ourselves on the back. Good, I didn't sit there and yell and insult people and put negative energy out in the environment. That's good. For me, that's good. Usually I would go, you know, and make everybody feel bad and create warfare. At least I didn't do that. Good for me. Okay? But then, yeah, so you rejoice at that. Then after that, you realize, oh, but I'm still angry. So I need to work with my anger. Okay? Because if I don't work with my anger, then next time I see the people, it's going to come out of my mouth. Yeah. Okay, so I need to work with my anger. You know, what am I holding on to here that I'm so angry? Yeah, let's let go here. Yeah, and work with our mind. And so it takes a lot of practice. And that's why we say we practice the Dharma. Practice means you do something repeatedly, not just once, but over and over and over again. Mm-hmm.